We're in the 21st chapter of Joshua still. This chapter has to do with the distributing of the cities that were to belong to the tribe of Levi. Remember now that the tribe of Levi did not have an inheritance as such like the other tribes had. They were to be given certain cities scattered throughout the land, and these cities then were their territory, their possession, and they lived in them and possessed them as though they were a true inheritance like any of the other tribes. We find that the number of these cities was 48 in all, and we'd gotten down into this third verse during our last study of the 21st chapter of Joshua. This third verse says, "And the children of Israel gave unto the Levites out of their inheritance at the commandment of the Lord these cities and their suburbs." Notice he says here that the children of Israel gave unto the Levites out of their inheritance at the commandment of the Lord these cities and their substance and their suburbs. So we'd like to notice just for a minute here what the command of the Lord did say. We turn back to Numbers 35 and begin with the first verse and read there through the eighth verse and see just what this command of the Lord was about this. And we'll learn a few of the facts here. "And the Lord spake unto Moses in the plains of Moab by Jordan near Jericho, saying, Command the children of Israel that they give unto the Levites of the inheritance of their possession cities to dwell in. And ye shall give also unto the Levites suburbs for the cities round about them. And the cities shall they have to dwell in, and the suburbs of them shall be for their cattle, and for their goods, and for all their beasts. And the suburbs of the cities, which ye shall give unto the Levites, shall reach from the wall of the city and outward 1,000 cubits round about. And ye shall measure from without the city on the east side 2,000 cubits, and on the south side 2,000 cubits, and on the west side 2,000 cubits, and on the north side 2,000 cubits, and the city shall be in the midst, and this shall be to them the suburbs of the cities. And among the cities which ye shall give unto the Levites, there shall be 6 cities for refuge, which ye shall appoint for the manslayer, that he may flee thither, and to them ye shall add 42 cities. So all the cities that you shall give to the Levites shall be 48 cities. Them shall you give with their suburbs. And all the cities which you shall give shall be of the possession of the children of Israel. From them that have many you shall give many, but from them that have few you shall give few. Every one shall give of his cities unto the Levites according to his inheritance which he inheriteth." So thus we have the command then given by God to Moses, which Moses passed on here to Joshua. The tribes that had many would be required to give more cities than the tribes that had few. These cities were to come from the tribes, as he states here. That is, they were not to appoint them cities that had not been conquered, cities that still were not in their possession yet. The Levites didn't have to go out and conquer these cities. 6 of the 48 cities would be the cities of refuge, and we read about those in the previous chapter. And he specifies there in Numbers 35 how much territory the cities would have, measuring out from the walls on each side, so that they'd know exactly how much would be the suburbs that they could use for their cattle. God's law concerning this matter is rather complete and easy to be understood, and given that way so as to avoid future misunderstandings and consequently future problems over disagreements about these cities. Verses 4 through 8 tell how these cities were distributed among the various families of Levi. So let's read these verses. "And the lot came out for the families of the Kohathites, and the children of Aaron the priest, which were of the Levites, had by lot out of the tribe of Judah, and out of the tribe of Simeon, and out of the tribe of Benjamin, 13 cities. And the rest of the children of Kohath had by lot out of the families of the tribe of Ephraim, and out of the tribe of Dan, and out of the half tribe of Manasseh, 10 cities. And the children of Gershon had by lot out of the families of the tribe of Issachar, and out of the tribe of Asher, and out of the tribe of Naphtali, and out of the half-tribe of Manasseh in Bashan, 13 cities. The children of Merari, by their father, had out of the tribe of Reuben, and out of the tribe of Gad, and out of the tribe of Zebulun, 12 cities. And the children of Israel gave by lot unto the Levites these cities with their suburbs, as the Lord commanded by the hand of Moses. Now let's look and see just what these verses are saying. Levi had three sons, Kohath, Gershon, and Merari. And so the cities are divided among the descendants of these three sons. However, in the case of Kohath, he was the father of Aaron and Moses. But since Aaron was the high priest, and all of his descendants would be the priests then, and not just Levites, but actually the priests themselves, he treats Aaron as a separate family. And so Aaron is given 13 cities, and they're located among the tribes of Judah, Simeon, and Benjamin. But the rest of the Kohathites, which included the family of Moses, they were treated as a separate family, and they were given 10 cities located among Ephraim, Dan, and Manasseh. The eldest son, Gershon, although he wasn't given the first portion, he was preferred before Merari. Gershon's descendants were given 13 cities located among the tribes of Issachar, Naphtali, Asher, and the half-tribe of Manasseh in Bashan. Then the third son, Merari, his descendants were given 12 cities located among the tribes of Reuben, Gad, and Zebulun. So a total of 42 cities are distributed among the descendants of these three sons of Levi. So we see while the other tribes had a lot for each tribe only, yet the tribe of Levi had a lot for each of its families, dividing them into a group of four families. We find as we continue in this chapter that verses 9 through 42 list these cities, and we're not going to take the time that would be required to read all these verses, but we'd like to give some of the particular conclusions that are found as we study these verses. Now, as we look at this account given concerning these cities, we find that the children of Levi, who inhabited these cities, not only occupied and inhabited them as tenants, but they occupied them as owners. They had the jurisdiction over them. They had title to them. They had deed to them. And this fact is further substantiated in Leviticus 25, verses 32 and 33, in which he teaches there that when the year of Jubilee came, these cities were to go back to their original owners, the Levites. However, since these cities and suburbs were surrounded by members of the other tribes, it might have been a common thing for the Levites to rent their houses as they could spare them to the Levites who would be tending the land round about the cities. We notice here, first of all, that the Levites were scattered or dispersed into all the tribes, and they did not live all together in any one part of the country. They were not a clannish group, as we might think, but they were evenly distributed among the whole land of Israel. Now, this would give them plenty of work, plenty of opportunity to mix with the rest of the nation of Israel, and to certainly set a good example as the ministers of God to the other people. Now, God made provision that while in this dispersed condition, these Levites were to be provided for by the rest of the people. He says in Deuteronomy 12:19, "Take heed to thyself, that thou forsake not the Levite as long as thou liveth upon the earth." Again in Deuteronomy 14, verses 28 and 29, "At the end of 3 years thou shalt bring forth all the tithe of thine increase the same year, and thou shalt lay it up within thy gates, and the Levite, because he hath no part nor inheritance with thee, and the stranger and the fatherless and the widow which are within thy gates shall come, and shall eat and be satisfied, that the Lord thy God may bless thee in all the work of thine hand which thou doest." So this dispersion of the Levites among the other tribes in these 48 cities had several benefits. One, it allowed the rest of the tribes of Israel to adequately provide for them, because each tribe had within its territory some of these Levitical cities. and consequently, no person was very far from a Levitical city or from being able to assist or receive assistance from a Levite. Also, those tribes that were furthest away from the tabernacle and later furthest away from the temple, when it was not convenient for them to be able to go up to the tabernacle, they could consult those who were in the Levitical cities. They could go to them for knowledge. They could receive the advice and instruction from the Levites, and that was a part of the duties of the Levites to be able to do this. And so God, you may say, set up a candle in every room of his house to give light to all of his family. And just as those that attended the altar kept the charge of God to see that no divine appointment was neglected there, so those that were scattered in the country had their charge too, which was to see that no idolatrous, superstitious usage were introduced at a distance and to watch for the souls of God's Israel. And this is one of the ways that God provided for his will, for the wisdom of his word to be spread and propagated among the people. Now we find that in the New Testament age, when Christ established the church, that the 12 apostles did not stay together in one group and divide themselves off into a secret order, but they were told by Christ to go into all the world and to preach the gospel to every creature. They were to spread, and they did scatter. And the new converts in the early church were also scattered. And it was this scattering of the people that spread the gospel and allowed for the establishment of new congregations so that this gospel was spread to all peoples. And we today, we're in a scattered condition, but each one of us is a priest. Each one of us functions somewhat like these Levites did. We have our light, we let it shine, and we then try to spread the doctrine of God among those whom we dwell. And so we see the same principle being carried out in the New Testament church as it was among the people of God in the Old Testament times. We learn here that the sons of Aaron received a goodly portion of these cities. They received 13 cities. And these were some of the best cities. And Aaron only had two sons, Eleazar and Ithamar, yet his family was now so much increased, and it was foreseen that it would so grow in number as to be able to occupy these 13 cities. And remember, these descendants of Aaron also had to supply enough people then to be resident wherever the ark and the altar were to attend to the needs of it. So of all the families that came out of Egypt, none seemed to have been so well blessed in numbers of increase as was the house of Aaron. As we read in Psalms 115, verse 12, "The Lord hath been mindful of us. He will bless us. He will bless the house of Israel. He will bless the house of Aaron." And the 14th verse, "The Lord shall increase you more and more, you and your children." And as has been noted before, six of these cities were cities of refuge, and some of them became famous for deeds that were done within their boundaries in later times. For example, Hebron was the city in which David began his reign. And in Mahanaim, another Levite city, David lay and had his headquarters there when he fled from Absalom. And also Abimelech, the son of Gideon, who wore the title of king, he reigned in Shechem, another Levite city. It also seems from this account now that the number of people in all these descendants of Levi were probably more than the number of any other tribe in Israel except for the tribe of Judah. So it seems from this account that good care was taken that the Levites should live both comfortably and usefully, and be about then the business of serving God. Beginning in verse 43 through verse 45, the last three verses of this chapter, we have the conclusion of this whole matter. with a brief summary of the history of God's promises and their fulfillment to this people. He says in verse 43, "And the Lord gave unto Israel all the land which he sware to give unto their fathers, and they possessed it and dwelt therein." God had promised to give the seed of Abraham the land of Canaan for a possession. And now, at last, he performed his promise. They possessed it and dwelt therein. They had often forfeited this benefit. They had often turned against God and had to be punished for it, chastised. Many of them forced to die in the wilderness before they could attain it as a people. But yet, God had now performed the giving of this promise. And so the land was theirs. They possessed it and dwelt therein. And this was the ultimate goal, the ultimate fulfillment of this promise to these people. The times had been long and hard in the receiving of this promise. We today can rest very muchly assured that the promise of the heavenly Canaan is as sure to all God's spiritual Israel today as it was to the literal Israel. For it is the promise given by one that cannot lie. We're now in a position where we can't see the fulfillment of the promise. We have not experienced it, but there's coming a time when we'll be able to possess it and dwell therein, as this people did. We also notice in the 44th verse, "And the Lord gave them rest round about, according to all that he sware unto their fathers." Now this was another fulfillment of the promise of God, this rest. He promised to give them rest in that land. And now they had rest round about. Rest from all the fatigues of their travel while they were in the wilderness, which was a very tedious march. Rest from the wars in Canaan and all the problems that went along with those excursions. And they now dwelt not only in habitations that were theirs and belonged to them, but also in peaceable ones. And we see where this people was going to have to make quite an adjustment. Most of these people had never lived in any place that they could really call their own. No permanent house or dwelling, only in tents that were movable. They were nomads from out of the desert. And they really would have to start an entire new life and existence and way of looking at things now, as they owned cities and houses and land and possessions. And they could count these things as belonging to themselves and not something they'd pack up and move off from and leave in a short time. It'd be like taking somebody today who had lived in nothing but a small, a cramped up apartment in a large city, and then suddenly he's put out into a large farm in the country and has to completely revise his whole way of living and his way of thinking about things. Now this rest that God gave them continued until they, by their own sin and folly, put thorns into their own beds and caused God then to become unhappy with them. We notice also in this 44th verse that he says, "And there stood not a man of all their enemies before them. The Lord delivered all their enemies into their hand." Showing that they were very successful now in the victory that God had promised them. He had promised to give them victory and success in their wars, and this promise was fulfilled. Nobody stood before them at this time. We'd like to note now that there were some present remains of the Canaanites. They hadn't all been run out of the land at this point, but that's no contradiction to the promise, for God had said that he would drive them out not all at once, but little by little in Exodus 23, verse 30. So they now had as much of their full possession as they could afford to manage and to populate, and so the promise had really been fulfilled. As to the fact that later the Canaanites became more prevalent and became more of a problem and a threat to them, this was purely a result of Israel's cowardice and slothfulness, and it was a punishment of their sinful inclinations to follow the idolatries and the other abominations of the heathen, whom the Lord would have no part with at all. So the foundation of God stands true. God is true to all of his promises, and it's up to Israel now for them to be able to really get the full benefit of this. Then he concludes in the 45th verse by saying, "There fail not aught of any good thing which the Lord had spoken unto the house of Israel, all came to pass." Everything that God had promised them, everything that he had indicated that he would do as a result of their faithfulness, it says here that it all came to pass. There fail not aught of any good thing. Now that is truly a summation of the faithfulness of God. It's the way God operates. It's the way we can expect God to operate today. Any good thing that he's promised us, there will not be any failure of it, not aught of any good thing. And we find that all of the true saints of God in the past have been ready to testify that the truth of God and his promise is inviolable. The performance of his promises are given to the utmost. And all know this who have been true followers of God. And if there seems to be any promise which God has come short of, a closer study will show us that it's not God at all who failed, but it's the recipients who must bear all the blame for not having been faithful to God. We today, as we live the faithful Christian life and dedicate our lives wholly to God, find that God amply blesses us. He gives us more than we really have a right to deserve, more than we have a right to think that he should give us. He gives it to us. He gives it to us freely, and we are able to enjoy it. Just as these people could enjoy their land of Canaan, we enjoy our lives today. But yet we have another greater inheritance to look forward to, that resurrection of the dead and the home in heaven with our Savior, as yet another fulfillment of God's promise to us. Well, that concludes the 21st chapter of Joshua. We'll close at that point. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.